What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the CUSA Underdog Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. Continuing the off-season content series today with a look inside Western Kentucky with someone who experienced the great season they had in 2019 firsthand, linebacker Clay Davis. Now, Jill Lonergan and Eric Henry here with you once again. Eric, we talked to Clay about this, but experienced a medical hardship that he had to deal with. And, you know, excited to, you know, talk to him and hear what he had to say about his time with the Hilltoppers and the next steps for him as a football player.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, it's always a pleasure whenever we can have a current or a former player, and Clay kind of fits both of those, you know, freshly medically retire. But still, you know, it's always a pleasure when those guys make time to come on. And I think the audience will really enjoy the conversation, getting a peek behind the curtain of Hilltopper football over the past 2 years, particularly that 2019 year. I know, you know, you and I both didn't really see coming, seeing where that program was coming off the Mike Sanford era. And then, of course, the opening day loss to Central Arkansas. I'll never forget the name Lawan Winningham. 8 catches for like 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. But the match rebound from that and have a really successful 2019. And in 2020, Joe, you know, one of the few teams in CUSA that could play a full slate of games. So definitely a pleasure to have that conversation with him. And I think the audience will enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, try as I might, you will not let me forget the name Lawan Winningham, will you?
it's so distinct, but also the reason I will not let you forget that one is, if you remember correctly, I called that upset. There was 2 FCS upsets I called. I can't remember which one was the second one, but I remember calling that one. And that's part of the reason why I will not let you up. In the three years we've been doing this podcast, I've called 2 FCS upsets, so.
All right, we'll let you have that one. Regardless, enjoy our conversation with Mr. Clay Davis. Great kid, and hope to hear more from him. Clay, really appreciate you having some time for us. You know, obviously, first off, so sorry to hear about the injury and the fact that your football career looks like it might be done. But, you know, from your time at Western Kentucky, we're a big part of that team in 2019, where Coach Helton was the CUSA Coach of the Year and really started bringing the program back. What was it like to play for Coach Helton in that year?
Oh, that was really exciting. Coach Helton is definitely the type of coach that you want to play for. He really brings a lot of energy to the table, and he really expected a lot out of us. And I think that's why we were so successful that season.
I mean, what was kind of the difference between him and the old regime from what you can remember?
I just feel like there was a lot more, respect for Coach Helton and intuitive to play for him. I think that really the biggest difference would just be those things I just stated. I mean, he just had a different energy to him that everybody just bought into and bought into everything that he believed in, and we believed the same thing.
Okay. What was kind of the feeling about the team going into last year, with it being such a strange year due to all the coronavirus concerns and whatnot? Obviously the record wasn't, I would assume, what you all were shooting for, but you know, what was it like being around for that kind of scenario?
Going into the season, we really had no idea, like, if we were going to get to play, but we were preparing like we were going to. And then obviously in August, during camps, when I had my first injury. So I wasn't really with the team a whole lot after that point. But leading up to that point, we were doing everything the right way, COVID testing 3-4 times a week, really just making sure that we were prepared for a season, because we didn't want to get to the season and not be prepared for it. So that was kind of our mindset, was prepare like we're going to be playing a full season. And they actually ended up playing almost a full year.
Yeah. For sure. So with the defense specifically, what was your impression of how much that unit grew from 2019 to 2020, and what do you expect from them in 2021 here?
Well, we had a bunch of new pieces coming into the to last season, the 2020 season. And I really expect them to grow a lot more going into this 21 season, because we have a lot of even more experienced players like D'Angelo Malone come back for another year. Just a lot of guys that stuck around that really wanted to make up for the year before. So I personally have really high expectations for this team.
Great to hear. Clay, when you came to Western Kentucky, you transferred in from Tennessee Tech. Obviously, you've probably heard about the rule change within the NCAA now that grants athletes a one-time immediate eligibility rule. What's kind of your thoughts on that now that, you know, obviously you went through the whole transfer process in college football and, you know, unfortunately had to sit out a year?
Well, my personal transition and my personal experience, I was kind of okay sitting out that year because I hadn't redshirted before at Tech. I played my first two seasons there at safety, and I was actually coming in to play linebacker at Western. That's where they wanted me to play at. So I was okay with really sitting the year out to learn the defense and really get bigger and stronger, because it's a different ball game from FCS to FBS.
Can you kind of elaborate on what were some of the differences between the FCS and the FBS game that you noticed?
The biggest thing has got to be the offensive linemen. The guys in the offensive linemen in G5 compared to FCS, anybody in the FBS programs is just a lot bigger and a lot faster. I mean, in the FCS, you had guys that were either big or that were fast. Really didn't have both of them combined. That's the biggest thing that I noticed. You had skilled players that were fast and could run routes all over the field, but that to me was the biggest difference. I'm not sure if that's just because I was going against those guys a lot more when I transferred to Western.
It seems like Western has a knack for bringing in these guys who can play that safety linebacker hybrid position. Do you feel like that's kind of part of the reason why you were attracted to that program in the first place?
I'm not sure if that's the reason I was attracted to it, but yeah, Conference USA, especially, you have to have linebackers that can run and that are fast and agile and that can react quick, just because of the type of offenses that we go against.
What are some kind of experiences that you had playing against some of those offenses that kind of demonstrate that?
Fatigue. That's one thing. I know against FAU in particular, those guys had really a fast-paced offense and faster than really any other guys in the conference. But fatigue is one thing that you definitely have to be prepared for, and quick signal calling.
Certainly makes sense. That FAU team, they've brought so much just speed and, you know, that no huddle kind of style of offense that Kiffin ran when he was there, and now Willie Taggart running right there. So they're super interesting to watch. Clay, you know, obviously with the injury issues that you had to deal with at Western, what was that experience like, and what was your mindset as you were trying to come back from, you know, a meniscus and an ACL tear?
Well, my mindset was really to not let it get to me, because, I mean, if you let it get to you, you're just going to delay your recovery and delay your time to get back on the field. For me, I was just thinking that I have to make sure I get back for the season, for the spring season, excuse me, because it was such a quick turnaround from fall to the spring season. I want to make sure I was ready for that. But my mindset was definitely just to attack it and don't let it get to me. I got to beat it up before it beats me up.
What was the process like when, you know, you consulted with your doctors and, you know, the training staff at WKU in regards to making the decision to, you know, retire from football?
Well, I took the time to speak with my family and my girlfriend and everything. And coming back, we aren't really sure if it was just inevitable, if it was just hereditary that the reason I got injured. So going through a whole nother second surgery and recovery was going to be a lot on me, and really putting myself at that risk for having a third tear, a third injury. And I really just wanted to be able to, you know, teach my kids how to play sports, or, you know, be able to move around with my kids. I didn't want to, you know, hobble around everywhere and not get to experience those moments in life.
I know part of your plan for this next phase of life is to get into coaching. How do you feel like those experiences dealing with everything that you've had to deal with here will influence your style of coaching?
Well, it really just anything that goes on in life, adversity, you have to be able to respond and rebound from it because no matter what you do in life, you're always going to have that adversity. And it really makes the person, what makes the person is how they respond. And I think that I will definitely hammer that home as a coach is what's next. You know, like what we always had this saying at Western, put the ball down. We don't care what happened last play, put the ball down and let's go again. And let's see if you can do it again. It's really just, that's, I feel like that's a very key mindset in football because you never know what could happen one play or another. And also another thing that I would really hone into those guys that coaches really talk to you a lot that I never really thought too much about is you never know if this is going to be your last play. And for me, my last play was earlier than I wanted it to be. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing in how it happened, but, you know, it's just adversity and you got to respond from that. So my next step in life is to get into coaching just because I love the game so much.
How do you feel like your journey and your experience as a football player translates to Call of Duty?
That's funny you say that. I was actually just now making a video for the new Warzone season that came out. I wouldn't really correlate the two, but just the passion that I bring in everything I do, I want to be the best at everything that I do.
And I know you're on Twitch and you're making the YouTube videos with Warzone and whatnot pretty regularly. I've checked them out a few times for reference. I've never once made it out of the gulag, so I can appreciate the high level players. But how'd you kind of get into that scene?
Well, I know I've always loved gaming and I've always, you know, kind of got into gaming, but I've never really got into streaming or gaming heavily really until my first injury. I knew I was going to have a lot more time outside of football, so really just to keep my mind off of things, and found out that I really enjoy making videos and streaming and stuff. Shout out to my channel, YouTube and Twitch channel, Silent CD. The I is actually a one, but yeah, I just really enjoyed those moments to really just get away from the injury because it is a lot mentally, and that's just kind of how I coped with it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, I got one more question for you before I turn it over to Eric here. On Twitter today, there was a post that came out with the best pizza in every Power Five college town. And for Louisville, they said Derby City Pizza, I believe it was. I personally hard disagree, but curious your thoughts on that. And if you do disagree, where is the best pizza in Louisville?
Impellizzeri's, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. It's a little quiet downtown, but they have some really good pizza and pasta. But I haven't really been to a lot of small chain places downtown a whole lot, but that one in particular to me was a really good one.
I 100% agree with you there. I've eaten my body weight in pies there many a times. And Eric, when we finally meet up in Louisville, we'll have to hit that up.
Listen, wherever I can find great pizza, that means you can find me. So I'm appreciative of that. Although, you know, and you know this, Joe, before I let you jump off here, is that going to grad school in Chicago, I'm biased, man. Deep dish. I haven't eaten anything that can compare with a Chicago deep dish pizza. So, I mean, can I at least get something like that at least? Or what am I in store for when I hit to Louisville?
Yeah, I think they have those. They definitely have deep dish. Might not be that Chicago style that you're looking for, but they have some deep dish. One place actually in Bowling Green that might be one of my all-time favorite pizza places. It's called Firehouse Pizza. They have a big chief pizza. I forget how big it is, but it's probably, I think it's might be like a 4-foot by 4-foot. You can barely fit it in your car. It's amazing. It's really good pizza.
You know what, Clem? I'm actually glad you mentioned that because I was gonna start with your high school days, but you mentioned Bowling Green, and you know, I actually have a chance to cover FIU for UDD and SB Nation. So I made the trip up to Bowling Green this year, you know, to cover the game, and I didn't get the pleasure of staying in Bowling Green. I stayed in Nashville and then drove over the day of the game. However, you know, and I don't mean this as a slight to the great folks there in Bowling Green, but, you know, is it just, it's just a little bit of a difference going from Miami to Bowling Green, Kentucky. So I was wondering if you could describe what it's like. I mean, you being a native of Louisville and then, you know, going to Bowling Green, how would you describe Bowling Green, Kentucky for those who've never had the pleasure of being there?
I would describe it by saying this: it's the highest, has the highest restaurant per capita in anywhere in the United States. I believe I've heard that before. Any food chain place that you've ever heard of, we probably have it. We actually just got a Texas Roadhouse for the first time, and I think a couple weeks ago, and there's been at least like an hour wait at any time of the day that you want to go there. But food, that's one place, that's one thing that I would describe it as: a bunch of food.
That means I need to circle back with FIU's SID. I will not call him out by name on this podcast, but he said that he could not, him and the rest of the communications crew that came up last year could not find a bite to eat. Now, of course, I don't know if COVID played a factor in that, right? So maybe some of the places were closed, but, and Joe, I see you're still on camera, so I see your face squinting as well. That's what they said. You know, they said Friday night they could not find a bite to eat in Bowling Green. So I'm going to circle back with him and question him on that one there. But
yeah, that's interesting.
gonna go back to your high school days, man. Want to ask you a two-part question here. One, about your college recruitment. I mean, as you know, Joe mentioned, you mentioned you started your career at Tennessee Tech at the FCS level, but do I have this correct? In addition to being a linebacker and an DN, you were also a all-conference or all-county receiver in high school. Is that correct?
Yeah, I actually I was trying to get recruited as a receiver out of high school for the longest. I enjoyed scoring touchdowns, running routes. Yeah, I was a all district receiver for 2 years, and I was also a all district and all state linebacker. I played a little bit of tight end, but I just really enjoyed playing receiver and scoring touchdowns. There's really not the same feeling that you get, like a sack doesn't really compare to a touchdown.
Okay. All right. So when you were, you know, growing up there in Louisville and you were, you know, balling as a receiver, who were some of your guys in the, whether it was college or the NFL, who were some of your favorite receivers that you looked up to?
You know, I wasn't really a big NFL guy, but growing up in Louisville, you had guys like Devontae Parker and Eli Jenkins and guys like that that played for Louisville that I always, you know, thought those were great receivers. Then we had guys like a little bit further back, like Mario Urrutia. He actually was a coach for us for a year in high school, and he taught me a lot as well.
And I do want to, like I said, ask about a little bit about your recruitment, how you ended up at Tennessee Tech. What was the recruitment, you know, process for you like? I mean, you know, we have a chance to talk to recruits all the time, and, you know, the great thing about covering CUSA is sometimes you may get a four-star kid who goes to school and, you know, they get all the offers in the world, but a lot of times with those kids who, you know, don't get any of the stars, and their recruitment process is unique. So I'm just wondering if you can kind of, you know, tell the listeners what your recruitment process was like and how you ended up at Tennessee Tech.
Yeah, so it's kind of a wild story. Like I said, I was trying to get recruited as a receiver, and it just, you know, it wasn't really working. I didn't run that 4.440 or 4.540, and you know, so I didn't really get a whole lot of looks from that. So I went on this the Gain Sports bus tour. It was a bus tour that goes to a bunch of different colleges and camps and 7-on-7s, and they talked to me about maybe playing defense and linebacker. And you know, I haven't really thought about it before. I really enjoyed playing linebacker in high school, and I was like, well, I mean, if y'all really think it's going to give me a shot to go to the next level, yeah, I'll try it. And yeah, I ended up working. I actually didn't have a single offer until after signing day, my senior year. A coach at Tennessee Tech called my high school coach and asked if they had any guys available. And he asked me. I was actually sitting right next to him and got the phone call. And I told him, I'm not locked in anywhere. I was originally committed to SEMO, but that was as a walk-on, so I was able to switch over to Tennessee Tech. Went down there on a walk-on day, we went to the first little meeting with all the coaches and all the walk-on guys they're looking at, and started off, and they took me to the side actually in the weight room, and Coach Satterfield just wanted to see my size and see if because they liked me on film, but they thought I was 5'10 on film, which I thought was funny, because that would have made everybody else on the field about 5'5 by that logic. So he actually pulled me aside and he offered me right there. And I mean, that was one of the happiest experiences of my life. I mean, I was going to be going to college for free to play football. And that was my first offer, was not expecting an offer at all. And I got that. And so that's kind of how I got to Tennessee Tech.
I know Joe asked earlier, you know, some of the differences between FCS and FBS football in terms of maybe on the field as far as talent's concerned. Want to ask you just in terms of, you know, the overall experience as an athlete, in terms of the facilities and things of that nature. I mean, can you kind of paint a picture of just the differences between, you know, going from the FCS level to, you know, then going to FBS?
Well, my school in particular, I can speak on Tech. One thing, when it rained outside, it rained in the locker room. Whenever it rained, there was always a leak in the locker room where it dripped in the middle of the locker room. Very big difference. I mean, the weight room was great at Tennessee Tech. That was probably the best facility aspect of it. Nutrition's a big difference. When I got to Western, they had a full nutrition bar. They had a nutritionist, a big weight room also, huge locker room that, you know, had your name in it, like your name on the nameplate. But it's just everybody has their different experiences, but mine was a pretty big upgrade for me.
Want to transition to 2019 season. And, you know, Joe kind of talked about just how special a year that was for Western Kentucky to go to a bowl game. But what people tend to forget is that one started out in a very auspicious way, to say the least. Talk about just the swing in terms of, A, you have that tough loss to Central Arkansas and kind of where the mood of the team was there. And then transition to the next week, as I mentioned, covering FIU, you guys came in as heavy underdogs, went down to Miami against a team that was projected to be, you know, one of the front runners in the East. And then you upset them on the road. And that really kind of, you know, kind of propelled you guys into a really great season. So just kind of wonder if you can talk about that 7-day stretch where you open the season with high hopes only to lose to an FCS team and then swing it around a week later and you pull off one of the bigger upsets of the Conference USA season.
Yeah, actually, after that first loss in the locker room, it was kind of down ourselves because the year before we actually lost to an FCS school as well, and that season didn't go too well. So we were all kind of gathering together to make sure that this loss wasn't gonna bring us down like it did the year before. We're gonna bounce back from this. It's just one game that we'll be all right, and that's exactly what we did when we went down to FIU. We were hungry. We wanted to win, and we just played better. I feel like we just wanted it more, and that's how we went down and got the win.
Want to ask about one more game in that season, and statistically speaking, it is the best game of your collegiate career, at least at the FBS level. You had a 13-tackle, 1-sack game against Middle Tennessee. I wonder if you remember much about that game and maybe kind of bring the listeners in a little bit on that one.
Yeah. To start that game, I didn't start Graham the first series. Asher O'Hara, he maybe looked a little foolish a time or two on that first series, and I actually got pulled out. And I regrouped, got my head together, and went back out to really put on a great game. One thing that I remember a lot is he was 44 for MTSU, a big running back. We were up by, I believe it was 3 points, and they were driving down with 2 minutes to go, I believe. And they handed the ball to him on a stretch, and I forced the fumble there, basically to seal the game. That was probably my biggest highlight from that game that I remember the most. Also getting my first sack of my FBS career was also really exciting. But that game was, we weren't sure if we were going to play. It was raining. It was thunderstorming. It got delayed, came out a little slow, and then we picked it back up, and rained most of the game, but we were able to finish it off. But that was an exciting game, especially being our, you know, long-term rival for us at Western.
Yeah, the big running back you mentioned there is number 44, Shaitan Mobley for Middle Tennessee. And I actually covered a game that year at Floyd Stadium where it was a monsoon. There is something unique about that stadium that when it rains, it just feels like the sky opens up on you and it just pours. So that's interesting. Real quick, I want to ask you, you know, very random sidebar here, Clay. You mentioned Asher O'Hara and you talk about him kind of, you know, making you look silly on one play there. Any surprise that he ended up transferring to the FCS level at Sacramento State? I mean, he seems like just on the surface, he'd be an FBS quarterback, right?
I actually had not heard about that. So, yeah, that is actually pretty surprising to me. I thought he was a great quarterback. I'm not sure what all is going on at Middle Tennessee, but that is shocking news to me.
No, yeah, I just want to throw that random sidebar out at you. But want to transition, of course, as you know, you and Joe talked about earlier with you choosing to, you know, hang up the cleats. Want to ask you this. I know it's kind of a somber question, so to speak, but I couldn't think of another way to really phrase it. I actually was watching a basketball show on ESPN earlier this morning, and one of the things they mentioned is that what can be tough for football players leaving the game is, you know, if you're an ex-NBA player or an ex-college player, you can go play pickup down the street no matter what, right? Or if you're an ex-MLB player or whatever, so you can always go to – go up to the, you know, the park and, you know, get a few swings in. If you're a football player, once you finish playing, you're not putting on pads and run up to the park. You're like, hey, you know, you want to go hit? So I just wondering if you know, kind of what that, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, excuse me, that finality was like for you, knowing that, you know, the injuries are just too much and you're never going to put on the pads again.
Really, what's helping me get through it is that I know I worked my butt off every day and that I was grinding. I mean, I came from a full scholarship at Tech to being a walk-on at Western, and ended up earning a scholarship under Samford, and he ended up getting let go, so I wasn't able. I never actually ended up getting that scholarship, and then Coach Helton saw how I did his first spring here and offered me a scholarship here as well. So two scholarships under two coaches at the same school really just kind of salutes myself for shows how hard that I work and left everything on the field. So I know that I have no regrets from my career, but that's really what's probably getting me through that, and family and all my teammates there showing me a lot of love and kind of all those things together, and you know, God really just being there with me, comforting me, keeping me at peace. That's how I'm getting through it all.
Got a couple more for you before we wrap this one up. You know, as I read in the Bowling Green Daily News, the Western Kentucky beat writer Jared McDonald does a fine job covering the tops up there. Mentioned that you know you're going to continue your career as a GA, and just wondering if you have any idea, you know, where you'd like to coach, if you know, had any talks with coaches about potentially coming on as a GA, and just what kind of coach that you kind of see yourself as.
I've reached out to a few different schools. I'm trying to go through kind of all my contacts on my phone and reach out to some coaches that I've coached under or I've played under, and that or coaches that I might know from camps and stuff. I really haven't had a huge league yet because, you know, a lot of schools right now are giving their GAs another year, or the NCAAs letting them get another year because of COVID, just like the players. So it's really kind of tough to find a spot right now. But, you know, my search is going to continue to look. I know that a few schools like Purdue is looking for a GA right now. So hopefully I can get on there. There's a, you know, Brahms up there. He was a great Western Kentucky coach. I would love to be up there and learn a lot under him. Sorry, what was your second part of your question? My bad.
Oh, no, you pretty much answered. The final one for me, if we're going to wrap this one up, is as you're beginning your coaching journey, just wondering some of the coaches who may have influenced you as far as, you know, maybe as a player, and then maybe what your style will be as a coach.
Oh, yeah, my style as a coach, I feel like I'll be a very energetic guy. Just my how I play, I feel like will very well, very easily transition over to being a coach. Just, energetic, passionate, emotional, and just really firing the guys up, because I feel like I can really get a guy going whenever he needs to. But also, I read players really well. I know some guys that you really got to get onto and some guys that you got to lift up. Just kind of being a leader on the field, you learn that a lot. And I feel like that will roll over to how I coach. But coaches that have really influenced me is one in recently is Coach Crum, my position coach and defensive coordinator at Western this past. Well, he just actually got promoted recently, but he's been a huge influence on me. His knowledge of the game is unmatchable. It's something I've never really been around, and he's going to be a great GA or a great DC and head coach one day. So that's one guy that's really influenced me a lot. Another couple other coaches is Coach Polizzi, my position coach over at Tennessee Tech. I think he's a DC now at UT Martin. But that's another guy that really took me under his wing as a young guy going into college and really had high expectations for me. And he really just kept me on the straight path so I could continue to where I'm at today. And lastly, just Coach Riley and Coach LaFours in my high school. Those guys really gave me the passion of wanting to play college football and really enjoy just every aspect of the game.
Love to hear it, Joe. Anyway, we can help this guy go out there and, you know, potentially through the power of the Twitterverse, you know, get this episode out, get Clay Davis a GA job. Joe, you want to finish it up here, buddy?
Exactly. You'll be a fantastic get back coach in no time.
I hope so. Yeah, I really do.
Awesome. Well, Clay, we really can't thank you enough for your time. For folks out there, if you want to follow Clay on Twitter and his other gaming platforms, it's Silent CD, S, the number one, L-E-N-T, C-D. Check out his gaming content and, of course, follow this young man's football coaching career. I know we're excited to see where you go next.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, so that was our conversation with Clay Davis. He's got a lot cooking. You know, hopefully I can let him kick my ass in Call of Duty sometime. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, well, that, you know, is a given. That will happen. I'm sure that you guys will be able to arrange it at some point in time. Hopefully I can get back up to Bowling Green and try the foods, the eats up there that you guys talk about. And also he, you know, pursuing his post-football career as a GA. So hopefully when, you know, social media and Twitter does its thing and this spreads out to the masses. And, you know, if you are a I am unbiased. However, Clay certainly sounds like a good kid. And if you are in need of a GA, he certainly sounds like he would make a great fit.
Absolutely. I do want to have a conversation with whoever your contact at FIU was who said they couldn't get a bite to eat in Bowling Green, Kentucky. That person needs an education.
I'll go ahead and out him / them. That would be the entire FIU communications traveling party, starting with SID Tyson Rogers, who is very great to us and provides us much days from time to time. But Tyson, getting thrown under the bus, that'd be Tyson Rogers, backup football contact Tyler Brain, and play-by-play man AJ Ricketts. They apparently could not find food in Bowling Green.
All right. Well, hit me up next time you're in Bowling Green. We'll try to align some schedules and, you know, get your bellies full. But yeah, thanks so much to everyone who tuned into this episode. Follow us on Twitter at JOEHIO _ Eric C. Henry _. Of course, Clay Davis as well. We mentioned his social handles a second ago. But and then, of course, at Underdog Dynasty every day for more G5 football stuff. If we're timing the release of this right, we've got a lot of draft content up on the site now. So go check that out. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Happy football watching.